Oh yeah, oh yeah.
Welcome. You are now in tune to the Real Sports Guys, Renegade Radio, where sports, life, and culture meet at the intersection. We're standing there, holding you down, getting you plugged in. All right? So we got you for the next 2 hours. Want you to sit back, relax. Got an excellent show, as usual, planned out for you. We got the three-man booth in effect. I got my man D-Wills on the line. Holler at the people.
Hey, we coming up on the best part of the year, college football, the NFL. I feel like my juices are flowing. I feel like I'm catching my stride. I look forward to a couple hours of just really getting into this.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. So, and then we got our man, Phil T., Sports PhD, holding it down. Phil T., where you at, man?
Hey, we counting down the game day. I'm ready. College football starting this weekend. Christmas come early.
So, hey, it's the pregame right now. We pregaming. You know, we got the smoke going. The cheerleaders is lined up. And, you know, we're about to come out the tunnel doing the Ray Lewis. You know what I'm saying? So it's about to go down. Everything's about to kick into high gear. We're going to talk some fantasy football. We're going to talk some pro football. We're going to talk some college football. But it's football season, baby. And that's the best time of the year. It's the most wonderful time of the year. That's the last y'all going to hear me sing on the show. But I had to throw that out there real quick. So we're going to get into something real quick, as we always do about this time. Start off the show with the funky editorial, which we have a sponsor for, in case you listeners out there didn't know. It's brought to you by Dr. Funkenstein's sneaker insoles. So, you know, the funky editorial brought to you by Dr. Funkenstein's sneaker insoles. That's a joke. All right, we don't have a sponsor yet. But we're going to get there. We're going to get there. So let's get into it.
Only one thing we need to say. Shall we say it, y'all? Melvin,
right.
Jimmy,
right.
Coleman, Ryan, sit.
Yeah.
Everybody want to get funky one more time.
And shout out to Clive Stubblefield, Madison native, who got shouted out in that clip by the Godfather. If y'all didn't hear he was shouting out Clyde at the end. The funky drummer is Clyde Stubblefield, and he is from Madison, Wisconsin. So I had to get a little shout out to my hometown and give a shout out to Clyde real quick. But so fellas, firestorm kind of started brewing. Maybe it was much ado about nothing. I think it was a combination of the two. It was definitely worth talking about, and I think there were some good talking points within this particular story, and I'm going to give it to you guys in a second. But I think also it's blown a little bit out of proportion as well. But it's the whole situation with old J.R. Richardson, the owner of the Carolina Panthers, kind of divulging that, you know, in a conversation with Cam prior to drafting him, they discussed tattoos and how Cam didn't have any tattoos or piercings, and how I think J.R.'s words were to keep it that way. So, you know, the story got out on the outlets, and, you know, all of the pundits weighed in, and they had their say. Well, guess what? It's 8:30 of Tuesday night, and the real sports guys get to have their say. So now we going to weigh in on this issue, and we going to give our unique special perspective on the situation. So, I'm going to toss this one. I'm a quarterback this one. I'm going to run a quick out to my man D. Wills real quick. I'm going to pass it to him because he had a little bit of fluff. He had a little dust up on Facebook over this issue. So, I'm going to let him kind of walk us through that situation. You know, because we talk about sports all the time, and we use all the different social media as avenues to interact with folks. And so that happens from time to time. You know, from time to time, we may get into a little scuffle, you know, a little e-battle, you know, a little war of words, and we keep it at that. You know, we keep it on wax. You know what I'm saying? We don't take it through the streets. We family men. We not e-gangsters. You know, ain't no Facebook thugging in a real sports guy circle. You know what I'm saying? Ain't no e-thugging in the real sports guy circle.
Facebook.
You know, we're not Twitter thugs or nothing like that. But, you know, if you want to get into an intellectual joust in the arena of sports with us, we'll take you on, head on. All right? We don't pull no punches. We don't back down. So I'm going to let D-Wills walk through that real quick.
Yeah, this was a good one because I think, you know, and this was a great discussion came going back and forth. And, you know, the game changer had to jump in, and he basically caught the oop like I was Sherm Douglas throwing the Billy O. And we took it home on this one. And I don't think we have a response yet back from both of our posts. But there seems to be, in this era of sports, it appears that owners have been able to tippy-toe and commissioners across the line on some issues that are not really about sports. It's not really about dress code. It's about individual rights in a way that the public have just kind of followed them across the line. And part of it's that backdrop that people, and we can dig deeper in this, underlining resentment of how much money some of these young folks are making, feel all right that NFL owners, commissioners, the NBA, all these folks can really come after these guys the way they've come after them. Now, I can justify why it might be all right or not to have a tattoo or not. We could talk about all the reasons why that wouldn't be good for your image. But a lot of these leagues built a lot of their energy on a culture that part of the brand is a tattoo associated with hip-hop. And the example I gave when the NBA tried to push the dress code on the players, at the same time, they built a lot of their momentum in the 90s, the late 80s and 90s, on the back of the culture that they were then trying to come out publicly and go against. NBA Jams is about hip-hop. The whole idea, the whole undercurrent, the whole NBA All-Star is around hip-hop. NFL leveraged a lot of that subculture. It was okay at a certain point. Then all of a sudden, they try to pivot on the same culture to help build the brand and then try to say, you can't do this. And there's something about that I feel is wrong, because it's okay when you can make money, but it's not okay when you feel like you can't control what some of these folks are doing. You can't control the Ocho Cinco of the world because they pivoted and now they're starting to pay off on the brand. And so it's this whole idea of sports being able to use culture to a point until it has no use for them. Then they can pivot. And that part kind of jives with me a little bit. You know, this is the same guy that talked about this being a business. Well, the biggest part of your business is the brand of your players. And a part of that brand is that image, is that living on the edge, is all that. That's what folks buy. They love that. And then you're pivoting away from it and say, yeah, I want you to, you know, keep it that way. It seems like there's a contradiction that's constantly there. And what's disturbing is that the public, because many of these folks who are in this are black or men of color, there's an issue that ends up happening that seems like it's all right. And I think that's very problematic. And I'd like to unpack that a little bit, because most people miss that. They think this is just about cats wearing tattoos and they should have the right to tell them about tattoos. It's not about that. It's deeper than that. And that's part of the problem, is that we won't go deeper than that. We just want to look at, like, these cats are making millions and they should be doing what they told. Don't have opinion. Do what you told, but we're going to make money any way we want to make money. And it's one of those things that I just think that we need to pay attention to. Hopefully that oiled the machine a little bit.
Oh, yeah, that definitely moved the chains. We got a first down. We had first and 10. All right, I'm gonna turn it. I'm gonna turn it. Hand it off to my man, D Newell, Sports PhD. What's your take on this? D Wills raised some great points, and we're gonna touch on those points. I'm gonna bring it back to those points in a second. But I want my man D Newell to weigh in real quick.
Well, first of all, I can't let this one go. Did Devon have a Sherman Douglas reference?
Not only did he have a Sherman Douglas reference, he weaved it. He weaved in there a Billy Owens reference.
Yes.
Don't sleep on that.
Yes. Right. I got to say, I love those Syracuse teams in the late 80s. I love them. I love them. Yeah. But, you know, I'm right with you with a lot of those points, Devon. I think one thing, and again, Jerry Richardson is a maverick in a lot of ways in terms of the culture of NFL owners. I mean, he's one of the more flamboyant, during the whole labor dispute thing, I mean, this was a guy coming out just saying a lot of random maverick type of stuff. So from that standpoint, when you are the owner of an organization, of a team, whatever it is, you have the right to say what you want to. Okay? Now, you can't enforce certain things that can be perceived as discrimination or taking away an employee's, you know, equal rights and whatnot, and their right to express themselves. But in this situation, I can't help but feel, you know, as an African-American, I can't help but feel some racial overtones there, you know. It just didn't come off right. It kind of rubbed me the wrong way. And, you know, I talked to four or five of my friends that actually live in Charlotte, and it didn't rub them the right way either. And, you know, from a brand, from a marketing standpoint, you know, Carolina, when they made the Super Bowl to play against the Patriots 5 or 6 years ago, everybody was on board with the Carolina Panthers. And since then, they've kind of taken a step back. And, you know, some of my friends in that area, like, there's some doubts in terms of the team and the organization in terms of them integrating into the Charlotte and the Carolina community. And Richardson saying these things doesn't help matters, doesn't help. Having a Cam Newton come to your organization could be almost like a savior for this community. And for this organization, because it's exactly what they needed. I mean, they needed a game changer who's got charisma and has the ability to make some things happen on and off the field. So from my standpoint, I didn't like him saying, you know, however it was said, I mean, there's been different versions out there. I didn't like him saying, Cam, you know, you don't have any tattoos right now, let's keep it that way. I just didn't like that. But at the same time, This man owns his team. He owns the organization. So he has the right to say what he wants to. But my issue is, you know, these players have a very short window to play football in relationship to their overall life. You know, let's say they live on the average to be 60 to 80 years old. You know, playing football for one organization on average might be 3 or 4 years. A career on average is 5 or 6. So why didn't these players weigh to express themselves, to market themselves, to do things, to make themselves stand out so that they may have opportunities later on in life after football?
Again, let's move the chains on this issue. Now, both of you guys raised some excellent points. There's a D hit on the fact that, you know, the contradiction within the statement, because the league has benefited and progressed and made money off of aligning itself with certain aspects of hip-hop culture. And I think, Phil T, you got at the fact that that creates inroads for players to market themselves, but also for the team to raise its profile with a certain population within a metropolitan area, which most teams are located in the metropolitan areas. that it may not otherwise have access and insight into. A couple issues that I, a couple things I want to add. I'm going to run a quarterback sneak real quick. And one thing I will throw out there is J.R., as I like to call him, you know, you know, I like to, you know, pay homage to his southern roots, so I call him J.R. J.R., he can ask for whatever he wants. You know what I'm saying? He got the right to ask Cam to say, let's keep it that way. But in the same sense, he don't got a leg to stand on. I mean, if I'm Cam Newton, I get a tat on my nose. You know what I'm saying? I'm like, what you gonna do? Trade me? What you gonna do? Release me? What you gonna do? Fire me? You know what I'm saying? Like, yeah, I get it. Not only do I get a tattoo for me, I get a tattoo on him. I put a tattoo. I get him tatted up. And then say, what you gonna do about it? You know, like, he can say let's keep it that way. But at the end of the day, if Cam went out and got a bunch of tattoos, he ain't finna trade him. He ain't finna release him. He ain't finna do none of that. And so, JR, good old JR can say whatever he want about let's keep it that way. But he don't mean that. You know, he's saying that to a kid who hasn't been drafted yet. But once you draft a cat and you didn't invest it in him, however much, what did he get, 20 mil? You didn't invest the $20 million into Cam Newton. Basically, at that point, Cam Newton got you by the bizzles. At that point, you're going to ride the wave of whatever Cam Newton does, and you're going to spin it however you can spin it. And I get J.R. wanting a clean kind of image. I understand it. I don't agree with it at all, but I understand it as a businessman. He thinks that that is what is going to advance his organization. He has a right to think however he wants to think, and he has a right to try and push that in a certain direction. My thing is don't throw something out there that you really ain't got the guts, the heart, or the firepower to back up. Because, again, if honestly, if Cam were to go get arrested, JR would just have to live with it and figure out how to spin it and make it into a positive. So, I mean, and he's talking about tattoos, which isn't even against the law. Right today, if Cam Newton went out and broke a law, they wouldn't release him, they wouldn't trade him. If anything, Cam would have to worry about facing Goodell. He wouldn't even be worried about his own owner. So that's how much little power an owner has, in my opinion, when you're talking about a player of that caliber and an investment of that caliber in this particular player. It sounds cute. It probably was real cowboyish when he said it. You know what I'm saying? It probably plays well as a soundbite. He can tell a good story to all his buddies, you know, back at the yacht club or whatever. But at the end of the day, he ain't moving Cam. Cam is his quarterback. Cam is his franchise. And if anything were to happen to Cam Newton, it would be a wrap. So that's one part. That's one part of the whole situation that I have an issue with, is that you're making requests and threats that I don't know if it was a threat or if it was in tongue in cheek. I really couldn't tell tone, you know, because there's a couple ways that statement can be said. It can be said in jest, you know. It can be said kind of in a tongue in cheek kind of way. But it also can be, you know, said in a purposeful, you know, kind of slick, passive aggressive kind of way. Like, I'm saying this and I'm chuckling, but I really mean it. You know, and I don't know all that. I can just go, all I can go off of is what was said. And so, be that as it may, that's one issue I have with it, is that he, with what army is he going to enforce this particular request? The other thing I have to agree with you guys. Both, a lot of professional leagues do this. They want to latch on to certain aspects of culture, and then step away from it. And what the general public gets on my nerves when they want to say, well, you know, if I'm going in for a job interview at a corporation, I don't want to have a bunch of tats. The NFL is not a corporation. okay? The NFL is not your gen pop job. It's the NFL. They're football players, okay? Let's be real about that. They're not, you know, investment bankers. They're not teachers. They're not lawyers. They're not doctors. They're not nurses, okay? It's like being a musician. Nobody cares if a musician has a tattoo because it's a profession. That nobody cares. That's not a big deal. I don't want my doctor having a face tat necessarily. I mean, I don't want my surgeon, a cat that's about to cut me open, having a face tat necessarily. Not that it affects his performance. It's just not a good image. But at the same time, I could care less if an athlete has tattoos. He's a freaking athlete. He plays a game for a living. Whoop-de-doo.
Why do you care about,
if he has tattoos?
Why do you care about the athlete and not your surgeon that's about to cut that, you know, that's about to cut on you?
Right. You know, it irks me to a degree when folks out there want to say, well, if I go into, you're not 6'6", 250 pounds. I'll talk about what if you went into a job interview and you had tats, what would they say? They would say they're not gonna hire you. Because you don't tattoos, as far as, you know, being a receptionist, it's not a good look. But when you're the quarterback, nobody really cares. You know, throwing incomplete passes for a quarterback is not a good look. Throwing picks for a quarterback is not a good look. Tattoos, who cares? So there's those are the things, and I don't want to throw it back to D real quick and. You know, when we had the dust up on Facebook, you know, one point I made was that, you know, with the NBA and both the NFL, they latched on to some aspects of hip-hop culture, and they try to move away from them. And again, I wouldn't even say this is necessarily a hip-hop thing. Tattoos can be identified with hip-hop, but it's not solely a hip-hop thing. It is more of a, I think, a youth culture thing. People get tattoos when they're young. Rarely do we hear stories about, you know, 45-year-old man getting off work like, yeah, I'm finna go get tatted up after I close out this deal. You know what I'm saying? As soon as I get off the phone with this client, I'm gonna go get tatted. That usually is not the way it works. Usually it's you know, it's something you do in your early 20s, you know, and you do it, and unfortunately it stays with you forever, because there's a lot of stuff that people do in their early 20s that they luckily for them that they only know about. But a tat stays with you, so it's one of those things that you got to ride it. You got to ride it out, and it's going to be there for forever. So in that sense, it's more of a youth thing. And I'm okay with that. You know, I'm okay with the fact that that's something that young people do. And I think, you know, again, J.R. is being old and crotchety. And I think that's another element of it, is that you have an old, rich, Southern man telling a young African-American man how he needs to be. And that part of it rubbed me the wrong way. That's the part of it I don't like more than anything. I don't like like I said, J.R. can ask him to not have tats. I don't even care about that. Because, again, with what army is he going to enforce that? But then in the same token, what gets me is that, you know, that whole dynamic, just that whole dynamic is probably of the rich, wealthy, Southern man coming up to the young black man and being like, you need to do X, Y, and Z. And again, as an idle threat, not that there's any real weight behind those statements. It's just, I feel like I'm in a power situation over you, and I'm going to exert that power over you, even though it's not really any power, it's just perceived power. And to me, that was more like a mental punch than an actual or anything real. It wasn't real. It was more just a stroke. JR was on ego, like, haha, I'm going to tell him to keep it that way, because I don't want none of that hippity-hoppity riffraff on my team, even though everybody, if he counted the tattoos and if he got paid per tat, he'd be a millionaire again, probably, if he went through the locker room of the Carolina Panthers.
Go ahead. Let me ask both of you. I mean, isn't that exactly what a lot of coaches do in athletics? You know, my wife was watching John Gruden's quarterback camp, you know, where he brought in Cam Newton, Terrell Pryor, Dalton, you know, a lot of the projected draft quarterbacks that were going to get drafted this year. And one thing she took away from watching the prior one is, you know what, he's really talking down to those guys. You know, I mean, the way he's talking to them is kind of condescending. It just makes me feel a little bit uncomfortable, you know, almost like Richardson's statement. And so a lot of times we criticize athletes for not being team players because they speak back, because they say things and do things. But if you look at that culture of sports, I mean, going back to Little League, to high school, to college, coaches don't talk to players with respect. You know, I mean, they probably have to talk to them a little bit more based on what they're getting paid now, but at the same time, in general, none of us would work for an employer. You know, folks that have options, that have education, we wouldn't work for employers who talk to us the way that football coaches talk to their players. And so, in my mind, this is no different. Richardson is talking down to Cam. He's telling them to do stuff. I mean, you know, the points you just hit on, Marcus. But it's kind of within the football culture. And what does a good athlete say back? Yes, sir. They just smile and grin, smile and take it. Because if they don't, all of a sudden they're a rebel. They're not a team player. They're not team first. And that's the issue I just take away, you know, especially in football, just the culture in terms of how the correspondence is a lot of times, especially on the field, the practice field and the game field.
I mean, football, there are things said in the locker room that most people in public in general couldn't understand, and even a lot of sports locker rooms. There's a way of communication that goes on that is just about sports, and that people understand, they grow up and understand that culture that most folks who walking around would think, wow, it's barbaric. And I would differ a little bit. There's a couple of things. I think as y'all was talking, the other part about J.R. is he's a former NFL player. He's like the only owner who's also in the NFL. So he also comes from a time in the NFL where they feel like they didn't do all this stuff. And so I think that's another backdrop. That's another layer in this conversation that I think that was part of what he felt needed to come out is we need to control these folks. They're getting too much, much more than we did when we were players. I mean, that part, I mean, this is also the same guy that went at, when did he go at, did he go at Manning and, or he went at, he went at Manning and those guys as well. And so, I mean, he's been going at everybody. But I would say the Gruden stuff, I saw Gruden talking, I saw him talking to folks in a way that he was trying to see if they were thinking about that. Like, so he'd say things like, you know, have you ever thought about calling a play in the NFL? Like, you know, X, Y, blah, blah, blah. I mean, he goes with this long play call. Like, what do you think about doing that? And I think he was just kind of messing with them and kind of trying to get them to kind of think through it. And when they were making mistakes, like, you know, that wasn't a good – I mean, he was talking to them like a coach, but he was talking to them in a way that I thought was more mentoring when I looked at it than just more as condescending. And so I would have not had a problem even with this interaction with if we would have came out and said, you know, he said he talked to Cam about thinking about his image and thinking about there's a way in which he could really – you know, if he would have, we talked to a lot of young people like this. And Marcus, you know this. The things we say, and we say, you know what? Something you might want to think about is how might you do this different than everybody else? You know, I noticed right. You don't have any, I'm kind of surprised as a young person, you don't have any tattoos or earrings. Tell me why. If he would have been more using, some type of inquiry in terms of asking that question, then I think that it probably come up, like, tell me why you don't have any tattoos or earrings. And Cam might have said, you know, I was my father's a minister, I raised a bit, you know, these are things we just didn't do in the household. And you might have said, you know what, you know, a lot of young people get money and they tend to change. You need to think about how valuable that is to your image, the fact that you're a young person who's very visible, who doesn't have tattoos. Think about that in terms of your brand. Because you probably look through the locker room, there's a lot of young, you know, I know you ran into Steve Smith, you know, he got plenty of tats. I'm not, you know, anybody said, I'm not knocking that, that's not something I like, I wish these young guys didn't do it, but you might think about, so if he would have come at him like that, like, think about what got you here. How are you going to keep doing that? That would have been a little different angle, and you probably would have got the same result.
Instead of coming at it like an overseer,
yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, look, you work for, you're going to be working for me. If you're going to be working for me, you need to not get no tats, young man. You know what I mean? Again, he got the right to say that. I don't agree with it. I think it's a little archaic, a little draconian.
Yeah.
But he got the right to say that. You know what I'm saying? But I agree with you. If he had to come at it from, look, this is a partnership. We're going to be working together. I see, you know, I like your look. I like what you got going on, you know, and I think that what you have is a perfect fit for where I want my organization to go. That actually gives some value to Cam as a partner in this whole process.
Sure.
You know what I'm saying? As an equal, maybe not even as an equal, but as a percentage. That gives him a percentage of ownership in this relationship.
That's right.
You know what I'm saying? In this exchange, in this situation, in this investment process, that gives him a sense of ownership. That, hey, look, yeah, me and JR, we in this together, and we going, you know, this is the image he wants. I think I can make that work. You know, I think we can make this work. I think we can work this out together. You know, things that he wants are in line with me, or maybe they're not. He could say, well, you know, I dig that, but I am planning on getting some tats, and, you know, that may be something I decide to do at some point. So, you know, maybe, you know. And in his head, he makes this. I want to get back to what Phil was talking about as well, when he touched on the idea of the way Gruden was talking to cats in the film sessions. But again, my whole thing is yes, that's a part of, for whatever reason, that's a part of football culture, and that's a part of sports culture in general. Coaches kind of talk to players that way. When I saw Gruden doing that, I saw him challenging guys a little bit. And players,
Cecil Dark, you know that. We always have to refer to our guru. Cecil got after some people too, right?
Exactly. And as an athlete, you're taught to either you back down from that and you run from it, or you take it as a challenge, you nod your head, and you go out there and you do what you need to do, or you cuss your coach under your breath. Either way, you learn how to handle that at some point in your athletic career. You know what I'm saying? But I feel that differently coming from a coach, because at the end of the day, the coach has the ability to either take snaps away, take playing times away, take touches away. You know what I'm saying? Your owner doesn't have that ability. The owner, to me, doesn't have that ability. He doesn't have that pool, especially the owner of a 2-14 franchise.
And I would say that coaches usually have a motive for doing that. And they're trying to see how you're going to react. They're trying to see, a lot of times they're trying to test how mentally tough you are.
Right, it's a challenge.
They're trying to see, can I get on your skin? Because if I get on your skin, you know, that cat from Nebraska going to get on your skin. A lot of times there's other motives for them doing it versus this just seemed to be, I got the pen, I write the checks, and this is how it's going to be.
Yes.
And Gruden, when I looked at Gruden, I was saying Gruden was, throughout that whole process, was trying to test them mentally about what they're going to do, you know, and trying to get a sense of how they're going to react. And they, you know, they pretty much held up to it, because it's probably what they get from their own coaches.
And I think that's part of what Gruden was doing. He was like, I'm going to see if I can criticize these cats. I'm going to see how these guys respond to criticism. Everybody through this whole draft process is praising them and telling them how great they are. And you know, their agents are telling them, I want to see how these cats respond, and I want to give the world a view of how cats respond. Because, you know, you get – and I think part of the Gruden thing, too, was like bizarro TV. You know, it was bizarro sports TV. With traditional sports TV, you got to interview the questions, especially on ESPN, because they really don't dig in on people. The questions are all kind of softballs. They're easy to answer. They're easy to give cliche canned answers, too. And I think what he was trying to do was say, look, this is what it's like behind closed doors. This is how we talk to these cats when nobody's looking, when the cameras aren't on. And I kind of want to show you what it's like to get in a room with how these young men respond when it's not a fluff interview, when, you know, the reporter ain't kissing their ass, you know, and when you really dig into some football things that they do well and some football things that they don't do well, you know, how do they respond? Because that's a big part of being an athlete is, you know, and that's what, I mean, you look at a guy like Vince Young. I would have loved to see Gruden take Vince Young in because I think it would have said, you would have saw that the cat really can't take criticism, you know. And so you can see some of those things as to how well, even though those cats have been coached, you know, and they've been coached on what to respond to and how to respond. So because of that, I think he goes even a step further and says, I'm going to say something real crazy. I'm going to come at them real crazy because I know they've been coached up. I know they've been coached up by the agents on how to respond to me. So I'm going to really throw them off guard. I'm going to really say some stuff that's going to kind of push. He's trying to push buttons. And that's what Gruden is really trying to do. Again, in a real setting, in a real film session, he may be pushing buttons like that, but again, I agree with Devon, there may be a method to that madness, and I'm sure there's a method to that madness, because if you're in film, you obviously got to learn something and get something out of it, so I would imagine that he's, just as much as he's doing that, he's coaching and teaching in the same sense, and I think in those situations, it's more about entertainment, and let's make this little man squirm, let's make this young man squirm real quick. You know, and I think I think there's an element of it, and I agree. I agree with Fealty, but then I look at that situation. If John Fox comes to Cam and says that, I still disagree with it, but I have less of an issue with it if John Fox does it, because John Fox actually has some recourse and some impact on Cam. The owner, to me, is, if you own a team, and once you start writing those checks, and once you've written a check, and once you sign a cat for a certain amount, X amount of dollars, especially when you've taken the number one, when you're talking about the number one pick, he's not talking about a fourth-round pick. He's not talking about a fifth-round pick. He's not talking about a third-round pick. He's talking about the overall number one pick in the most recent draft. And if he disagrees with you, you just got to live with that, you know, as an owner. If this kid disagrees with you, what you going to do, Cleve? What you going to do, Cletus? You know what I'm saying? Look at what you going to do, Cletus. You know what I'm saying? Like, what's going to happen? You know? Yeah. I want to shift gears real quick and move the conversation. We're talking about quarterbacks. We're talking about young quarterbacks. I want to weigh in real quick on it. And this is not planned, so we're going to freestyle for a moment. This is not something that I gave the guys a heads up on to check out. But Tim Tebow. Tim Tebow also is kind of creating a bit of a firestorm out in Denver. Here's a question. Do you keep him? Do you trade him? What do you do with Tim Tebow?
Do you cut him? Somebody asked me about this. What I suggested is that what I would do is build packages around him. I would take a slash approach. I think one of the genius things about what they did with Cordell early on with the slash thing is that what it did was it forced defenses to spend 20-30% of their time preparing on those packages. I mean, that's what I would do. I would try to figure out how to take what you knew he could do in college and make it work for you and create a way in which you force defenses to use a lot of time. So that's not spending time also worried about Orton. And if you can get somebody, if you can be a defensive coordinator to spend 10-15% of his time on Tebow packages, that's the edge you have. So I wouldn't trade him. I mean, anytime you got an asset, figure out how to use him.
Yeah, but they made it hard.
It was
because that's not what you do with a first round pick. And I agree with you. That's one thing you can do with him. But
right now that doesn't matter because this new regime, that's not their pick. Right, it'd be different if it was still Josh McDaniels, but they got, you know, it's Elway. Elway gets a pass, so they can do what the hell they want to do right now. Because in some ways, for them, it's always viewed as they inherited. They didn't pick him, and that's where you got to remarket it. You know, look, we didn't pick him. We were trying to figure out what to do with him. That's all you got to do with a pivot. because they aren't the GM. They aren't the ones responsible for picking Tebow. They just trying to. All they got to say is we trying to figure out how to make a bad situation work.
It was interesting. I heard. It was interesting. I heard one commentator say that the Tim Tebow era is over before it even started. You know, because before the season started, he was pretty much, it appeared he was handpicked to be the guy. And now all of a sudden he's battling, you know, in terms of his performance, to be the third best quarter, you know, third string quarterback. I'm with Devon. I think you have to utilize what the player's strength is at this point and use practice and the offseason to develop him more, you know, in terms of getting actual snaps and also in the film room. And, you know, taking this a point further, I hope Carolina does this with Cam. You know, look at Michael Vick. Michael Vick was effective when he first got in the NFL. And why? They let him do his thing. And later on, he developed to be a pocket passer. Now, one would hope that Michael would have developed a bit quicker than what he did, but don't try to put Cam in a little box. Don't put Tebow in a little box. Put him in the pocket and force them to be something that they're not. Ease them into it, but also allow them to use their strengths as well.
And what I'm saying, and this is what Dee is saying, that this ain't on this regime, so do they just let them, do you just cut your losses and say, look, we're not going to tailor nothing around this dude because we didn't pick this cat to be our guy, and we really don't got nothing for him, so he may have to ride.
I mean, that's an option. I mean, you can pivot it either way you want to pivot it, but I look at the overall strength of my team. If I don't feel like I have enough going for me on offense right now, then Tebow's asset, even if it's on red zone, even if it's in short yardage, even if it's, you know, running a wildcat. I mean, run the horse until you can run it. If you can run him, how you can run him. I mean, I'm thinking they have to evaluate the rest of their offense. And if they feel like, in the rest of their team, they feel like they don't have enough to get over top, because they got a very winnable division if they could get, you know, at least play well out there. Because there are a number of teams going through transitions, learning to win, things like that. You know, that's the only thing I would look at. You know, can Tebow give me anything to add, or are we good enough right now to win games without having something that's a little bit different? I mean, I think that's what helped the Miami Dolphins, you know, a few years ago, running that wildcat. Sometimes you got something that allows you to get over the top, you know. So that would be the only reason I keep it, but I think you're right. I mean, you have the choice to pivot on this and do whatever you want to do on these three things. I would not cut him. If I could trade him, whatever, if he got me a seventh, get something. I would either keep him and show that he can have some value that you could trade later, even if he got you a fifth round. I mean, get something back for him. I wouldn't just cut him.
Now, see, I was so, you know, it's interesting because they had the article if Mike Vick was white. And I think if Mike Vick was white, he'd be Tim Tebow. Vick is a better thrower than Tebow. But I think like, people just wouldn't know what to think of him. People just wouldn't know what to do with him. I mean...
Yeah, I mean, some ways...
What do you do with a white guy who can run?
That's the thing about it. I mean, we're talking about Cam. We talk about a number of players that are black who, you know, Cam had much better throwing motion and much better stuff than
Terrell Pryor has a better throwing motion than Tebow. And I wish somebody would come out and just say that. Like, you know, people try to get on Pryor about what, you know, people just don't like that cat right now. I think Phil T was talking about how he's very much disliked in Columbus, and I think people just don't like Terrell Pryor right now. But I don't know how you can consider yourself an NFL evaluator, Mel Kiper, what's the other dude, Todd McShay, and say that Tim Tebow has a better throwing motion.
Tim Tebow's problem is he can't throw. If Tim Tebow could throw in the slightest bit, they would just roll with it and go through the lumps. Because what he takes off the play, he can put back on the play with his legs. But he can't throw.
Yeah, you know, he.
That says it all.
I'll take it from you, man. If I'm the Broncos, I try to get something for that. Navon just mentioned 6th, 7th round pick. I think you might be able to get a little bit more. Maybe a 3rd or 4th round pick. Because think about, there are a handful of teams out there that use the Wildcat quite a bit. You know, I'm thinking of the Cleveland Browns. I'm thinking especially of the Miami Dolphins, you know, back when Ronnie Brown was there a couple of years ago, or even as recent as last year. There are a few teams out there that want to use the Wildcat but don't have the ideal guy to run it. That's why there was a market for Brad Smith. You look at Brad Smith's numbers with the Jets, and you look at what he got paid with the Buffalo Bills. Again, this is a team that puts a premium on a guy who can do different things, and it can also run their Wildcat, but has the threat to put the ball in the air. So I think there might be some takers out there for Tebow, and quite honestly, that might be what the young man needs, a change of scenery, not having all that pressure out there in Denver, and having a chance of being just one of the guys.
And, I mean, and I would say, and we're talking about throwing motion, nobody had a worse throwing motion than Vince Young. His motion was long. It wasn't even. I mean, he made Randall Cunningham look like a quick release Elway or somebody like that. I mean, he had a long gaping motion, and you know they went with Vince. And I know people talk about they had a great defense in Tennessee and that helped him and everything else. You can't do the same for Tebow. I'm not saying Tebow could be a starting quarterback right now, but I think the way
you're not saying that. You sure?
I'm saying that there are people. I think Vince Young is probably the closest comparison to him, because I think if you look at Vince Young's throwing motion coming out of Texas, it take 3 seconds to get out of his hand, and so. They figured out, he figured out how to win some games. So I'm just thinking about it's a question of if Mike Vick was white or if Tim Tebow was black, what kind of opportunities would he get? If Tim Tebow might have got more opportunities if he was black.
So here's a $1 million question. If Tim Tebow was Muslim, would people like him? Because Randy Cross was like, people don't like him because he's Christian. That's all I'm saying. So people like him more if he was a Muslim or something, right?
Maybe
if he was true to Islam, he'd be more liked.
I'm spiritual at my core. People kill me. And a lot of these folks call themselves Christian folks. And we sit there. They in church every day, but it'll be a Monday talking about, I can't stand that Tim Tebow talks about God. folks are just crazy when they call. That's what they call fanatics.
Hey, we got somebody on the line. I think it's Ray checking in. Ray, you there?
Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you.
Okay.
I was class, man.
Oh, it's class. Now I'm driving home in the rain.
Oh.
Just trying to stay alive. Hope I don't hit a deer or something. Yeah. I'm over here in the country. Fort Atkinson is country.
Oh, yeah. The Fort ain't no joke, man. Best ball player from Fort Atkinson ever, Josh Hens, went to Beloit. Yeah, shout out to Jay Hens. Fort Atkinson is country. Jay Hens will tell you.
I know. Yeah, it's like Fresh Lick. I know why he played ball, because there ain't nothing else to do out here. It's dark. It is. I'm driving home in the dark. Nothing but my headlights. I ain't seen a car in about 7 minutes.
Hey, God, Kyle, you in a horror movie.
I like your Tebow conversation. I just was listening in
Hey, we losing you a little bit, Ray. You still there?
I'm sorry.
You still
I'm
there?
Still.
I don't know if you slid off the road.
You'll know.
Yeah,
when
so what you say? What do you think they should do with Tebow, Ray? Why don't you drop some knowledge on how do they handle this cat? Because he's causing problems because he's bringing a lot of attention and he ain't producing.
Well, that will be a problem, and you don't have to have. If he's not producing, you don't keep him. And I think that's I don't care where you draft him or how much you have invested in him. You know, just to hold a roster spot for somebody that's not going to fit into your program. I do agree that, you know, Tebow may have some playing time somewhere. And I think if he were released, you know, he could think about where he should go. You know, but it's obvious that Denver had high hopes for him, and then now they treat him like, you know, like the plague. They just don't want him around. And they're doing nothing to squash, you know, I've heard nothing, you know, to squash any of this, you know, from Denver. They're like sitting back going, you know, let the media chew him up. Let the Denver fans chew him up. Maybe he'll just leave, you know. But you know, as long as you're sending him a check, he ain't going nowhere. You fed the cat. The cat's going to stay. So, but I think that they should, you know, have a serious talk with people and say, look, this is the direction we're going to go. We're going to release you. Where can we, you know, where would you like to fall? You know,
yeah.
these deadlines are coming up, you know, and there are players that might latch on to a team. I think the other thing that happens with coaches and GMs and owners as well, you know, what happens if Tebow was a great college, he'll go somewhere and blows up on you behind. What happens if Tebow turns out to be the next Brett Favre? You know, so you just keep him on your bench so that you don't have to feel like Jerry Glanville. You know, you have to worry about that. He was a successful college football player. He won football games. And you can't take that away from him. Now, his NFL career, you haven't seen it. Nobody really has. And so if Denver is treating him this way, and he should blow up, you know, that's just, you know, Denver's loss. This is not the direction they're going to go. They should let him go. What's
that? He threw for 300 yards at a game last year. How many rookies threw for 300 yards in a game last week?
Right. Oh, I agree. I mean, and that's the idea. You know, the other knock on Tebow is that he's just not that bright, that he's just not learning the offense, and that for all of his attributes, his Christianity and everything else, he's still kind of a bumpkin and kind of, you know, you've got to play it down.
And maybe we should just pray for him. Maybe that'll help. Maybe we just need a prayer circle.
He sometimes has that Forrest Gump going. He does have that Forrest Gump. You know, a couple lines come out thinking, is this Forrest? Run, Forrest, run.
So, you know, there's this perception that Tebow is really disliked by the media. And that he's kind of polarizing. Let's unpack that a little bit, because for once, we have a white athlete who you either love him or you hate him right now. There isn't a whole lot of in between with Tebow. So let's dig into this real quick. Like, why do people who dislike him, and why do people who like him?
Because when they talk about his ability, when they talk about him, they talk about the attributes that are good for a person, but that's not necessarily good in terms of football. Some of them are. So when they talk about Tebow, they talk about his intensity. They talk about his morality. They talk about all those things that are great, but may not be good in the locker room, but may not necessarily win you football games. And people get sick of hearing that, because you're not telling me anything about his potential, his throwing motion, where has he proved, and the kinds of things that make you a good quarterback.
So if you listen to how people have described him, even when they talked about him up to the draft, they say he's a good kid, he's a leader. That stuff works in college, don't work in pro locker rooms. And so I think that's where he's getting the pushback from the media and folks like that who have been around the game. That's not necessarily going to – I'd rather have a Maverick who can throw that out 21 yards on a rope. That's the guy that I want. So can he do that? And we don't, you don't, no one's ever talked about that. So I think that's why he gets a lot of the pushback from media and other players and other things, because they talk about the things that might not necessarily win you games.
Well, that, you know, and that is part of the, you know, that whole moral misconception about, you know, Tebow. He is a religious man. He talks about his God. And you know, I'm imagining folks in Denver, you know, are wondering, you know, if you where's your God at? Because you ain't playing that well to even get in that starting lineup. You know, they don't want to hear all that. They you know, they don't want that religion jammed down their throat. They want to know how you go throw for 300 yards again. They don't want to hear his stance on abortion. You know, they don't want him to use his celebrity. He ain't got no celebrity right now. College is over. You're a Denver Bronco now.
Yeah, I just, for me, I can tell you where I'm not in the Tebow camp, where I kind of fall on. I wouldn't say I'm a hater of Tebow. He's kind of, I'm kind of indifferent on him. I don't care. Until he starts to show some signs of being a football player, I really don't care about him. But I think, for me, the dislike of Tebow comes from the fact that it ain't got nothing to do with his religion at all, or even what he stands for. It's really because so many people like him, and he can't play no football. And if he was any other shade under the sun, he would have switched positions already. It's the same thing with Terrell Pryor. You know, if Tebow and Terrell Pryor switched places, and somebody had taken Terrell Pryor with a first-round pick, and he was floundering the way Tebow is floundering, they would have switched that boy's position 20 minutes ago.
Right.
They still trying to make Tebow into a quarterback. Turn that boy into a fullback and get what you can get out of him.
Right. And that's the other thing that, you know, that does polarize him, is that if you, you know, there's so many other players that have great professional careers that, you know, realize that they're not NFL quarterback material. That doesn't mean that they don't have a place in the NFL. I mean, when he was drafted last year, they talked about, you know, how well he would do on special teams. This ain't somebody you drafted to be your number one quarterback. You know?
When do you talk about quarterbacks on special teams? Come on.
Right. I mean, that's exactly what they were talking about. You know, I think he'd be very good on special teams. Well, you don't put something, you know. You know, Denver,
yeah,
and a lot of other teams probably looked at him like, well, you know, he could be a starting quarterback. So we'll draft him in this position. You know, Heisman Trophy winner, blah, blah, blah. I don't know. It's just remarkable to me that they continue to play him up as a quarterback. He ain't gonna be no quarterback.
The thing that gets me so mad about this, and I'm gonna leave, and I might not say anything else after this. As much stuff they've given Tim Tebow, the chances they've given Tim Tebow, and the NFL didn't draft Charlie Ward, who had much better throwing. That's the part that threw me off. So every time I see this, I'm thinking Charlie Ward had to go to the NBA.
Or Tommy Frazier.
I mean,
okay,
you know what I'm saying?
There you go.
And Charlie Ward was throwing the football and was advancing the football. He wasn't just, he wasn't running. He was throwing that rock. And everybody would make every school excuse in the world why he couldn't make it in the league and didn't draft it. And so that's the only thing about this that brings up a little bit of salt for me, is that all this thing. I switch him to age back and be like, get used to it. And he's the kind of kid probably wouldn't complain about it. Now,
I don't believe that.
You move prior to receiver, he might
be
lost. Huh?
You know, I think that is the problem, is that he hasn't, you know, I wouldn't sit on that bench so long, you know. I'd ask to play. Find me a spot. I don't want to sit there and watch. I don't want to sit here and get burned up in the media. I want to play. Let me get back on that football field. That's where I'm going to show you what I can do. And I don't care if I had to snap the ball. I'll be the 10-yard snapper, you know. I'm playing. I'm getting my check. I'm going to earn it.
Yeah, so I'm gonna leave that. I'm gonna let that dead horse be. Tebow sucks. We're not gonna beat that dead horse anymore. All right. What I do want to talk about is the Eagles just gave Vic his second $100 million contract. Michael Vick just signed today his second $100 million contract in his career. Now, we real sports guys gotta weigh in on this. Good move by the Eagles. Bad move by the Eagles.
Oh, if they didn't, as long as he didn't go out and buy a dog, it was a great move. Somebody's going to pay him $100 million. You know? So he deserves $100 million. This is not the same. This is not the same $100 million contract. This is a grown man now. He's done some things that in his private life and in his public life that warrant this kind of contract. They knew they better pay him because they can't afford to have him be a free agent.
Not with all the money they spent this year.
Exactly. And the fact of the matter is, if you know, this is Michael Vick. This isn't a product of the system. This is a quarterback that had success in Atlanta, and now he's in Philadelphia. He is that franchise, whether they like it or not, or rather they can handle it or not. Phil T,
you hanging out?
You know, I was happy to get his contract. I was real happy to see Vic get his contract, but I'm a little biased. I've been rooting for this guy since day one, you know, and I've been rooting for him since he came back into the league. You know, like a lot of others, I didn't really see the whole Philadelphia connection, like why that was the best place for him, but it worked out, as we can all see, on so many different levels. You know, one of the things that's really been bothering me, because again, I want to make it clear, I think he deserves the money, like what Ray said. But one of the things that's been bothering me in the media is that now everybody's concerned about Michael Vick, if he's going to be able to handle $100 million. I'm thinking to myself, now, I mean, we need to be concerned about every professional athlete that's making 10, 50 times more than the average American, 100 times more than the average American, you know, on a weekly basis. You know, why are we concerned about Michael Vick and him being able to manage his money? If anything, I mean, Michael Vick is the person they talk about in all these intervention programs that the NFL has for rookies to teach them how to manage their money and take care of their money. I mean, Michael Vick, you know, this is a guy that lost his freedom, had to file Chapter 7. You know, this is a guy that came back to play at a fraction of his worth, you know, a fraction of his worth. I mean, why are we concerned about him managing his money? Now, if this was Ben Roethlisberger, who went through the same situation and came back, and all of a sudden he signed the same contract, would we be saying, I'm worried about Ben managing his money? I'm worried about him managing his life. It's just that double standard that eats me up sometimes.
Well said, well said. Man, feel you a little angry?
Yeah, I'm a little fired up over here. You know, I'm up here shadow boxing. I'm a little fired up, man.
All right, so I want to. I'm happy with Mike Vick. You know, I'm glad he turned it around. I'm glad he came back. It's a great redemption story. It's an American story. It's something that really could only happen in this country. And, you know, good for him. Now, let's get down to some nitty-gritty. It's fantasy football season. Last week we got started on our fantasy football, on our fantasy, you know, our little fantasy football preview. And I want to get back into that. We stopped at number two with the Fantasy Banana Peel Specials. And since we're talking about Mike Vick, I want Phil T has a dilemma right now that he wants to share with us and share with the listeners out there. And, you know, while we got Ray on the line, who's also a fantasy football expert, we're going to get some input. We're going to rally around Phil real quick and see if we can help him make a tough decision. Go ahead. Let the people know what's going on with you.
All right. Well, first of all, while we got Ray on the phone, I want to thank him for putting me on the Arian Foster last year. He single-handedly fostered it, put me in my league championship. So thank you very, very much. Now here is my dilemma. I have, I've been part of this really competitive league with a handful of guys I played ball with and kicked with in high school. And, I mean, it's pretty much almost like a keeper league, but we don't have a keeper league. But, it's pretty much the same 12 managers every year. So, anyway, our draft is coming up this Saturday, and we already know what we're picking. So I am picking at number two overall. And the person who's picking at number one has already said, hey, Phil T, he already posted it. I'm picking Adrian Peterson, you on the clock. I need some help. I need some help on who I should pick up at that number two position.
How many points for throwing touchdowns?
Good question. The scoring is, for throwing touchdowns, is 6 points, 10 yards per point for passing, running, and it is a point per reception league, and we also play individual defensive players as well. We have, and we also have two flex positions where we can play quarterback at.
Oh, wow.
Oh, that's a no-brainer. You take Vic.
Hey, there's still an argument for Adrian, for a young man.
Vic is like having a third running back in your lineup. If you could play two quarterbacks, I go Vic and another quarterback.
Yeah, because Vic was like.
Vic could get you quarterback points, running back production.
Yeah. He'd have been ranked 16th for what, running backs? I mean, Vic.
Yeah.
He's gobbling up some yards as a running back.
If you got a format where you can play two quarterbacks, picking where you're picking, I try and tandem up Vic and Drew Brees or somebody like that, or Phillip Rivers. You know, given that you're gonna be picking again at the turn, coming back around and then get your back with get a back and then go quarterback, or go back and then get a quarterback in the third round. I'm just saying.
That's a wise way to take it. Yeah, okay. That is a wise way to try to play it, but the only reason you can do that is just because of the gluttony of running backs in the league right now. But you still can't overlook those top three running backs, or to me would have the top three running backs, and that's Adrian Peterson, Arian Foster, and I'm throwing Ray Rice up there this year. I think that Ray Rice, now that he's going to get them goal line touches, is going to score, a ton of points. So I just think that, drafting at number two, it takes the pressure off of you. And Vic is certainly a viable choice. I'm not convinced that Michael Vick will have as much success. He'll be successful. He'll be a top three quarterback. But if you watch, if you think about what they did to him last year at the end of the year, he wasn't, when he first got on the field, he was a gangbuster. And this guy will score you 50 points. But I had Arian Foster and Michael Vick. I'm the lucky cat that snatched his behind up off of the waivers.
And
he lost me the championship simply because, in week 16, they got to him. And I needed some points real bad. And so, I mean, it's a crapshoot. But anytime you have a league with 6 points, for a throwing touchdown, that kind of puts those other quarterbacks in that same elite league. And I'm not fond of picking a quarterback that high in the draft.
Yeah, Okay. Yo, I'm in the same camp as Ray. I don't think Vic is gonna produce the way he produced last year. I think he's gonna be a good quarterback. I think he's gonna be an excellent quarterback. Well, the reason that I would go with that strategy is because you can play two quarterbacks. That's your, and then with the running backs that you do have, because the running back pool, after the first two or three guys in the running back pool, it's about 15 running backs that are all the same.
Sure.
And then it's about 10 guys after that. Where we know, historically and statistically, we know one of those 10 guys who are not in the top 30 is going to wind up outproducing all the guys ahead of them.
Exactly.
It's going to be one guy, Arian Foster last year. Now, everybody had Arian Foster in their top 30 running backs last year. Not for real.
But again, you could go with an Aaron Rodgers at number two and realizing you have the consistency behind you.
Right, and the reason I would go with Vic is because he gives you so much in rushing yards. It's like having a third runner. It's that like having an additional back?
Yeah,
because he's going to give you those rushing yards, and you can get a quarterback like a Phillip Rivers who's going to throw for a bunch of touchdowns, or a Drew Brees who's going to throw for a bunch of yards, throw for a bunch of touchdowns, who can give you that consistency.
Well,
and then you got that extra running factor. Plus, he's throwing touchdowns and throwing for yardage, as well as picking up yards on the ground and rushing for touchdowns.
Well, I think
that's the only reason I would go with that strategy. But I feel the same way that you do about Vic this year, Ray. I'm actually kind of staying away from him in most standard formats. In most standard league formats, I'm kind of shying away from Vic because I agree. I want that dependability with my first pick.
Right.
And the other
side,
you really want to factor back, take Tebow.
But I think
if he comes with Jesus.
with that format, though, you know, Phil, I would be snatching them quarterbacks hard and early. You know, if you could figure out how to get two of the top five quarterbacks, you know, you look at fantasy football and realize that them quarterbacks are going to score 250 points in a format like that.
Yeah.
The top five quarterbacks.
Starting.
Yeah, so if you're starting a quarterback.
Go ahead, Phil.
We're starting one quarterback, two running backs, three receivers, a tight end, a flex, a traditional flex that does not include the quarterback, and then a second flex that includes any offensive position, including quarterback.
What is this, the Loyola Marymount fantasy?
I'm telling you, man.
Yeah. And then we got a kicker, a team defense, two linebackers, two DBs, two defensive linemen. I mean, the draft is like 25 players. You know,
I was
like going to
say, man, y'all drafted for like a week.
Yeah,
I mean, nobody's available, you know, after the draft. I mean, you got to play Tim Tebow after the draft.
Did I get picked last year?
What'd you say?
Did I get drafted last year? Y'all might as well be taking people off the street after a while.
Right.
Let me take Marcus Flowers. He's going to tackle a couple of middle schoolers. Take off a couple of notes in class.
Oh, my goodness.
That's a deep league.
Yeah.
But, see, that's a dedicated group of 12 right there, because I don't know 12 people I want to sit in the room with that long. That's a hell of a draft.
I'm telling you, man, that's a marathon, man. And you gotta call your wife and be like, hey, I'm going to be gone all weekend.
Right.
All weekend, I'm out. I got a draft.
Just sitting in that draft, how many people double up and draft players ain't even in the league? And you got to go back and let him draft again.
My second round pick, I like to take Randy Moss. What you mean he ain't in the league? When did that happen? It's always that. You know, it's always that one guy who ain't been paying attention to nothing.
With that 2008 cheat sheet.
Right. Well, what about can I get Terrell Owens? He ain't in the league either no more, man. When did that happen?
But, I, you know, the other side of that, Phil, if I were going to go running back and I knew that Adrian Peterson was gone, I wouldn't hesitate to snatch up Ray Rice over Arian Foster. I expect big things out of him this year. If you do go with a running back, make sure you keep that in mind. But then also make sure that you pick up some of them young guys towards the end of the draft. At pick number 38 or whatever, how many are you picking?
All right. Yeah. So, you know, that's Phil T's situation. So call us if you want to give him some help, feel free to call in 1-347-989-0844. Get on with us real quick. Now, I want to touch this real quick. Three, give me each of you guys. We'll start with Ray while we got him on. Give me three sleepers. I know you. Actually, we'll go with somebody. We'll give Ray a chance to kind of digest this real quick, because I know Ray don't want to tip his hand and give us his real sleepers. Because I'm not giving y'all my real sleepers. I'm gonna give y'all some old fake sleepers. But they sleepers nonetheless. And I know each of y'all. I'm being real. I know each of y'all are doing it too. So oh hey, because we all gonna be competing in leagues and stuff. And I don't want y'all in my head at the draft, so, you know, I'm going to give you some fake sleepers, but they sleepers nonetheless. They're just not my sleepers.
Right.
Hey, y'all know me. I compete. So, three sleepers. What's that?
I think if I had to start with my – and I'll be honest with you. If they're around and – when I want him to be around, I'm snatching him up. I think Beanie Wells is going to be a lot better player than last year. I think now that he's getting the majority of the touches in Arizona, they aren't going to do a whole lot more than run the football. And I think, you know, Beanie Wells is he's getting drafted a lot later than he should be. I like those guys that come off of injuries. I think Jermichael Finley is going to fall in the draft a little bit farther than he should. Maybe not up here in Wisconsin, where you got anybody trying to grab a Green Bay Packer somewhere on their team. But I think, you know, in an average league, Jermichael Finley will probably be the third, maybe the fourth tight end. And I think this guy's got potential to be the number one tight end in the league. You know, another sleeper that I'll be targeting, I'll tell you if he's around when I want him to be around, is Evans for Baltimore. I think now that he's out of Buffalo and in a new system, I think that he's going to be a lot better receiver than he's been. And he's never been a bad receiver.
All right. I'm going to take this one next. I'm going to go ahead and weigh in next. And since Ray was up front and he was up front, I'm going to be up front with it. One dude that I'm really, 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 really high on, but I'm scared. And I'll admit that fear. And it's simply because of his coach, Tim Hightower. I always have had a rule, don't mess with Shanahan. Because Shanahan, I mean, you saw what he did to Donovan McNabb. He just, but at the same time, when Shanahan gets a back that he likes, he feeds him. And Tim Hightower's been running well this preseason, and he looks like that guy that at next 10 outside that top 20, top 30 running back. He may be in the top 20 now because everybody's hot on him, but because anybody with eyeballs can see the band can run. But he might be that dude this year. At this time next year, we're talking about a top five, at least a first-round pick, with Tim Hightower. Another guy I really like, and that's Greg Olsen, a tight end out of Carolina. Whether they start Clausen or Cam, they're going to be throwing short passes. They're going to be throwing a lot of short passes. And he's a mismatch, and I think he's due for a big year. I liked him when he was with the Bears. When Mars came in, I think it was just a bad fit. But I think he's going to do some big things out there. And then a bit of a super sleeper, a guy that I really like, is Mike Thomas from Jacksonville. I had him in the league last year. It was a PPR league, and I had him just as a fill-in. And as a number two receiver, he was real productive. Real productive, caught a lot of passes, got me points, didn't get in the end zone a lot, but got me a lot of points. And now this year he's going to be the number one because Mike Sims Walker's moved on. So I like Mike Thomas, the wide receiver out of Jacksonville. So those are my three, Tim Hightower, Greg Olsen, Mike Thomas. D-Wheels, what you got?
Y'all pulling me in here. So I got got to catch up a little bit on here. But I'm reaching on these. So we said sleepers.
Yeah, sleepers.
This is a guy. And this is a guy that had a great playoff run. One run. But has had previous seasons where he's done well. I don't quite know where the head coach is going. And that's Marshawn Lynch. Somebody got to do something up in Seattle. And I think, if he can, he might, and he's in the sleeper category. Another person, just because I think he's going to pick up more carries and just might be, you don't hear as much about him because they had the duo going, is Felix Jones. I think, Dallas has kind of been under the radar as a team. I mean, this is the first season in a long time Dallas hasn't come in with a lot of hype at all, in my mind. I don't feel that usual Dallas hype.
They shouldn't.
Because even when they shouldn't, they do. You know what I'm saying? It's just one of those things. I think down the goal line, I think Felix is going to, get more touches. This year, I just think that this might be a breakout for him. And then I was riding on Marcus's a little bit on the because I don't ever understand why the Bears got rid of him, and I didn't understand the offensive coordinator selection in terms of Olsen. But I think Olsen is going to be a great. We look at, you always look for that tight end that can give you something. That tight end is kind of like that icing on the cake. And if you can get him, if you can catch one of those tight ends, like a Olsen, and I might even, like a Mercedes, Lewis, one of those tight ends that can kind of get you over the top. They give you those points. They give you those points where you don't think it. If they can give you, you get a good tight end, it's a difference maker. I think he might be the kind of tight end that can do that. So, Olsen, Felix Jones, and Marshawn Lynch.
Okay. Those are all good ones. I like those guys too. In particular, I like Felix. I think Felix, I had Felix on my team last year. He didn't do nothing for me. But I ain't mad at him. I think this year he's gonna do what he should have done last year. What I thought he would have done last year. I think last year. And one thing I want to say about the Cowboys, is anybody smell a rat other than me? I think Jason Garrett, all of a sudden, I think Jason Garrett tanked on Wade Phillips.
He didn't look like that.
You know what I'm saying? I think he tanked on Wade Phillips, man. The offensive philosophy changed when he became head coach. They started calling plays on offense different. Like, wait a minute. You was running the offense to begin with. Now all of a sudden things change. So that's just a little quick tangent. I'm just saying.
It like he had the Wade Phillips playbook, and then when Wade left, he brought that big playbook.
Right. He's like, this is my playbook. This is what Wade, we running with Wade, but I ain't gonna show Wade all my stuff. So yeah, that's just a side note. I want to get D-Newell sleepers real quick.
Garrett said it was all good just a week ago. All right.
Right.
All right, so my first sleeper is McCluster, the receiver / running back out of Kansas City. I think he's a guy that, depending on the matchup, can be a very valuable asset, especially in deeper formats, deeper leagues. Personally, I think Charles is an injury waiting to happen, and when that does occur, I think we're going to see increased production in Thomas Jones, but also McCluster. The coach has already said that, you know, Haley's already said that he'd like to see McCluster get more touches. And, I mean, this kid is just explosive. I always liked him back in Mississippi. Now, again, he's a deep sleeper. These next two guys, I'm predicting that one will be top five in his position and another guy will be top 10 in his position, where last year they weren't even in the top 15. And they both wear that Honolulu blue in Detroit. So I'm going to go with Brandon Pettigrew, the tight end. And the other guy I'm going to go with is Matt Stafford. And the reason I kind of paired these guys together, luckily in Tiffany's league, I was able to pick them both up. So that's why I'm willing to talk about it this week. is, you know, I mean, this is their third year together. And, you know, again, maybe it's wishful thinking, but I'm seeing like this Aikman and Irvin or Aikman and Novacek type of situation. And, I mean, Pettigrew put up some really good numbers last year. 71 catches, you know, over 700 yards. I mean, that's pretty solid, especially in point per reception leagues. And Stafford, you know, I'm on the bandwagon just like everybody else. I hope I won't be disappointed like I've been disappointed with Flacco. But, you know, I'm just really impressed with this kid. You know, I think he's tough. I think he, you know, the beginning of last season we saw a lot of, you know, a big-time progression from his rookie year. You know, unfortunately, he got hurt. He messed up his shoulder. But, you know, all reports out of Detroit is that he's a real deal. And, you know, I've seen him watch. You know, like, I watched him a little bit in the preseason, and he showed me quite a bit. Now, it's the preseason, okay? But I've been pretty impressed with him.
Excellent. So there you go, for all the listeners out there, you got 12 sleepers, all right? You should be well equipped for your draft. Now, we kind of got into a little bit with the sleepers. We kind of got into our breakout guys. That's the next thing I want you to give. Give me a guy who you think is just going to break out and really exceed expectations, and really have, you know, a guy who's a mid-round pick who's going to perform like a first rounder. Let's go there. I thought the D Wills first.
Well, since we kind of combined the sleepers and a possible breakout, I'll say Marshawn Lynch. And I don't know why I feel this, but I just think that division, in some ways, up for grabs. I don't feel like when I think about that, other than, you know, St. Louis is developing, you know, somewhat a great defense. I know Arizona has some great defensive players, but I just feel like a lot of those teams are in transition, and I think that he can get off a little bit in some of those games. I just think that he might have been sparked just by his playoff performance. So he might be a guy that can, if he can stay healthy, can be that person that might end up, because they're going to rely on him. They got to think about ways to get him the ball. You know, given that they got a quarterback who we're not sure where he's going to end up.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Noted. Ray, who you got? Breakout candidate.
Well, I don't. I don't try to find them breakout guys in the middle round. I try to draft them right up front. But I guess if you know, I'm sitting there and I've got, you know, three picks left, I'm looking for one of those young third-year receivers. I like that Williams boy from, I think it's Baltimore. And I think Michael Crabtree is a third-year man this year. I believe in that theory. I believe it, you know, when these young guys get in these offenses, by their third year, they really got it. And if I'm looking for, you know, that one or two player that's going to give me some points unexpectedly, it's usually a third-year receiver, unless I snatch somebody up off of waivers because somebody got hurt. Otherwise, as far as somebody having a breakout, I generally don't get my – you know, the core of my team in those later rounds. I try to get them up front. I try to stay away from the runs and you know, the other player that, you know, it's kind of like Yvonne was saying with Marshawn Lynch. I think, you know, if I'm going to target somebody that is going to score me some unexpected points, I'm looking at McGahee in Denver, because I don't think he's gonna stay upright. You know, that's the kind of player that I'm looking for. You know, the guys that are gonna get opportunities after a few games. You know, the guys that are coming in fresh. Ricky Williams is another one. You realize that, you know, he's what, 107 years old, but he's, you know, all that good ass living. You know, he could still, if something should happen to Ray down there, you know, they're the same, to me, they're the same kind of back. You know, that little scat, can't catch him. They aren't going to change the offense up one bit if Rice should go down. So, I mean, if you should draft Ray Rice, you better pick up Ricky Williams, because you're going to, you know, if you lose that first round pick, you know, you're not going to fall that far off the horse. If you got Williams, one of those guys you can bet. Ricky Williams is one of those guys you can bet come around 12 or so. If he's still out there, I'm snatching his behind up.
Okay. All right. Dino, what you looking at?
I'm going with Cedric Benson. I think.
I'll shoot.
I think it mostly. I'm sorry, what'd you say?
I call him House Shoes Benson, because when he's with the Bears, he ran like he had on house shoes. He did. I mean, he's gotten better. I'll admit, he's gotten better, but I like that nickname, so I always call him House Shoes.
Didn't he just get arrested again?
Oh, yeah, he gets arrested every couple of years. He gets arrested. He likes it downtown at the police station.
Yeah, he's going to miss at least one game. He's got to serve 20 days. So what they're going to do is they're going to, right after the week before they go on a bye, he's going to report to Texas, and then he's going to be out the entire bye week. Plus, he's going to miss a game, and then they hope to have him back right before another game. So he's going to miss at least one game. And
what about
actually,
what about a suspension?
What about what?
What about a suspension? You know,
that's possible as well.
Game, but Goodall got to take a look at him and go, you know, this ain't your first time with a striped suit on.
Hey, man, what I will say is, man, I'm disappointed in Goodell, man. He's just letting cats walk in his office, slapping him on the wrist and letting him walk out. Yeah, he ain't suspend Kenny Britt or the other kids to leave. We just did a show last week complaining about him suspending people. Did he stop suspending people?
The word got up the hill.
You know, Kenny Britt, you know, in defense of Kenny Britt, it was during the lockout. You know, you can't just call me up and I ain't working. I ain't on the job.
Right,
if I'd have been on the job, you know, I would have been at the facility working out. Since I wasn't working for the NFL, you can't really hold it against me. It ain't like you know, it ain't a felony. But
I just wanted to throw that out there, man. I just thought that was funny. He was like, yeah, you're going to get up with a warning this time. But so who'd you say you had, Phil T? House shoes.
Yeah, so Cedric Benson is my first choice. My second choice is Fred Jackson in Buffalo. I think there's a little bit more clarity out there in that backfield. I mean, he's going to be sharing carries with C.J. Spiller, but at least he doesn't have to share it with three or four guys as he had the last couple of years when Marshawn Lynch was out there as well. You know, I think they're going to use Spiller more as a change of pace back. You know, he'll probably eat into some of Jackson's carries. But, I mean, I like Jackson, man. He catches the ball. He gives you some points on the return game. And he always surprises you, you know. He's out there, and all of a sudden, Fred will run for 110 yards. And you're like, dang, who had Fred Jackson this week? Nobody. He was on waivers. So, you know, I like Fred Jackson. I like Cedric Benson.
Okay. My breakout guys. My first guy is I like what the organization has done to really give this guy in particular a lot of weapons. He's a quarterback, Matt Ryan, out of Atlanta. I like what they've done as far as giving him weapons, giving him complimentary pieces. And for me, if he don't do it, the reason I'm picking him, because if he don't do it this year, I don't know if he got it in him. You know, like, Julio Jones seems like a monster. Roddy White is a monster. Michael Turner is still effective. They got Jason Snelling and Jaquizz Rodgers back there as change of pace backs. He still got Tony Gonzalez as a tight end. His offensive line is intact. It's all there. So I'm looking at Matt Ryan. If he don't get it done this year, then he's just going to be kind of a right below that upper tier elite quarterback the rest of his career. I don't know if he got it in him. But I think this is the year. I like Matt Ryan to break out. And then another guy who I think is going to break out, Devon laid it out there earlier. He's got all the motivation in the world. You know, he's watching cats marry his old beat piece, and that's Reggie Bush. It seems like Miami is really looking to utilize his talents. Hopefully, you know, he said he didn't like playing on the turf and the turf was bad for his knees. Hopefully that's true. And hopefully he does get it popping on South Beach. Right now he's at the top of the depth chart. So we'll see if he can stay there. But I think just his receiving ability alone, if you're playing in a PPR league, that's going to be helpful. And if he can give you 600-700 yards rushing plus 700 yards receiving, well, you know, you made out like a gangbuster. You got a 1,400-yard back right there plus 70-some receptions. So if he can stay, but again, the thing with him is health. It's always health, always has been health. He hasn't played a full season at all, I don't think, in his career, not since his rookie year. So that's the only worry with Reggie. But I think this is the year he finally gets it, and I think he's going to have a good 2-3-year run out there in Miami before he starts getting hurt again.
Another cat you can't overlook because of Reggie Bush is the fellow they hope to replace him, and that's and Darren Sproles down in New Orleans. You know, if you're in a CP, you know, if you're getting points for receptions, you know, that's his new role. And they wouldn't have gotten rid of Reggie if they didn't think he could fill it. So look for some things to come out of him this year that you probably wouldn't have expected or, you know, may not be on the radar. Because New Orleans is not changing their offense. They're going to have those third down five receiver sets, and they're going to come after people like they always have. They just won't have Reggie Bush to do it.
Yeah, I think that's another good one to keep in mind. Now, for this last question, I'm just going to throw it out there. Whoever wants to pick it up can pick it up. But for the listeners out there who just need some general tips on the draft, just some of that general wisdom that I know we owe, between us four, you know, you got a lot of championships, a lot of rings, a lot of fantasy football rings between us four. It's like sitting down with Bill Russell. It's like sitting down with, you know, Magic, Jordan, and Bird and talking about how to win the title. This is what you got right now. You got a round table of some real experts, you know, the fantasy football experts on ESPN. We don't know if they even win leagues, for real. We win leagues, okay? On the Real Sports Guys, we win. We've all won multiple leagues. We get money every year, all right? All right, so we're going to give you all some insights and tips on just how to work your draft, because if you do good work at your draft, the rest of it is cake. It's easy at that point. If you F up your draft, you're going to be scrambling for a minute. before your roster looks anything like you want it to look. So, you know, you got to make sure you put it, do your homework. So I'm going to throw that out to the fellas. Anybody can take it and run with it. Just give the folks a couple tips on how to make sure that they are on point and on their game at the draft.
I'll just start with the one basic rule I always follow. Never take a running back on a Shanahan coach team. I tell you, you talk about it, look at it historically, other than like a Davis, they just kill you. They go run. You never know who's going to run. The depth chart is about 90 people long. So there are certain teams you just know you have to stay away from, and you got to identify them. And everybody knows my rule. I stay away from Shanahan like the plague. Kind of running back. But there's a couple teams you just got to recognize that there's some coaching patterns to some things that just has been true. If you look at 10 years of data, it's true. And so that's just my this one slight thing that people may not even have thought about. I'm going to give you that one.
Okay.
My word of wisdom to anybody out there getting ready for their draft, and it's just, it's something that Devon will tell you, and we know it to be true. It was just something we learned from old Bill Bailey, is that about that third round, that fourth round, you had better take that player that's going to make a difference. And it could be the best available tight end. It might be that wide receiver, regardless of what trouble they might have been in. This is fantasy football, so you're not looking for Tim Tebow in religion. You're trying to win this ring. You better find that player that's going to make a difference, that week in and week out, you know, could put you right over the top. You know, and that's, you'd like to think that it's said for you know, every round in that draft, but people start to panic and start to fill slots, you know, as they make this draft. And I would sit there and watch Bill, you know, go away from what everybody else was doing early. If everybody was taking running backs, he seemed to take a wide receiver. Everybody started grabbing up their quarterbacks, he grabbed that third running back. I don't know why, but it was always that difference maker that he was looking for, always the one that gave him the edge. The other word of advice, if you do get caught up in that draft, when all else fails and that clock is ticking, you just grab the best running back you can. Just snatch him up, because sooner or later, somebody who drafted those fine wide receivers or that stud quarterback is going to need a running back, and you just steal him away. Snatch him right up.
I think that's another point, is that understand the depth chart, because, you know, if you know, I like you. You're talking about Ray Rice, and then you got Ricky Williams. I mean, look at the statistics in terms of the health of running backs and the number of running backs that get used each year. You know, those become assets, and so, you know, pay attention to those teams that really emphasize running. Folks are going to take a beating. You know, have two quality backs. You know, really pay attention to that depth chart, and also make sure that you're able to, you know, fill in that backup running back late in the game, because folks are just not lasting seasons. I mean, these guys are stronger, faster, they're hitting harder, you know. But, you know, think about those assets that you can trade. If somebody's slipping and not paying attention, you know, make sure that you catch somebody late in the round that, you know, this guy's not going to stay healthy. This is going to come back to me.
Hey, you're getting great advice right now, listeners. Again, stay with us. Stay with us. You're getting great advice. Phil T, what you got? You got anything to share with the folks out there?
I'm about to play the fifth, man. I got three of my guys who are going to be drafting with me on Saturday. Listen, it's just sending me text messages. You know,
we got
you know, they telling me, hey, I got my notepad.
Right, we in the league together.
I got my notepad.
But I'm like Babe Ruth pointing at the fence. That's confident. You don't know, because game changer, no, I'm like misdirection.
I'm about to see the fifth. We've already tried.
I don't blame you, Filthy. I dig that. I'll pick it up.
Joker's text me. Hey, I'm taking notes. I got my notepad out. Okay, all right. Get your notepad and type down. Filthy, please the fifth. Write that down. Okay.
You should have never said anything. You could have led them down like Dick Cheney.
Well, you said you could have had them. You could have had them in Iraq looking for a cat from Afghanistan.
You got to take D'Angelo.
Right, I'm real high on D'Angelo Williams. Yeah.
Sell him on old D'Angelo.
Out of it, you should just come out like draft a receiver by the end of the first round. I mean, you could have done a whole bunch of stuff in misdirection. You could have set it up, man. The art of war, man.
I got a good heart. I got ethics.
Now, F that, get the money. Now, F that, just get the money. Nah, I'll weigh in on this. I'll pick Phil T up and weigh in on this one. For me, I agree with Ray and Devine. You have to take the principle I live by usually. And last year, in particular, in the draft that Ray and the league that Ray and Devine and I are in together, I went away from my usual strategy. I tried something different, and I think I wound up in like second to last place or something like that. So I'm gonna go back to what I always do, which is I take the best available player on the board. I don't care what position he is. If I gotta take four running backs in the first four rounds, and I'm going to take four running backs in the first four rounds. Last year, I tried to be cute and take a quarterback early and then get a big-time receiver, and that receiver I took happened to be Randy Moss, and that just was effed up. That didn't work out at all. That didn't work out good at all. So sometimes it's better just keep it simple, stupid. And I think that's the thing that you need to think about. Don't outthink yourself, you know. Best player on the board, take him. Take him and run with it. Know your format, you know, because knowing your format is the difference between taking, for example, a Rashard Mendenhall, who is good in most formats, but in the PPR format, I'd rather have a LeSean McCoy rather than a Rashard Mendenhall, because even if LeSean is going up against a defense that ain't going to give up a whole lot of rushing yards, He's gonna catch a lot of passes, whereas Mendenhall got to go up against the Ravens twice. And so, you know, that's 2 weeks where you're looking at about 50 yards and possibly no scores from your number one back. So it's things like that you need to be aware of with your format. And then you also just need to be aware of the players that you're taking, you know. Aware of the philosophies of the team. You know, like Devine staying away from those backs that are in Shanahan systems. It's hard to take a Colts receiver, even Reggie Wayne. It's hard for me to take a receiver from the Colts because Peyton spreads the ball around so much, especially this year, where I don't know who the number two is. It could be Kylie. It could be Garcon. Maybe Gonzalez finally shows up. Who knows? So
I don't take a receiver off those teams with a quarterback that likes to run the ball. I might like Jennings, but you know they get down the short and Aaron Rodgers, he'll just run the shit in. You want to throw something at the TV, you know? Any of those Philly receivers, although they can blow up for you on any given week, I don't trust the reliability. You know, they sooner or later Michael Vick will take off and run. You know,
we said once they cross the 30, it's a wrap.
Right.
That's how I feel about Packer receivers. Like, I had Greg Jennings last year, and it was like, okay, they got inside the 45, but he ain't scoring a touchdown.
Yeah.
You know, unless
no,
it's like a 50-yard pass, once they get in the red zone, Rodgers is running in, or he's throwing it to the third-string tight end.
Yeah. But that's, you know, going back to your format, you know, if you just – trying to get a little piece of fantasy advice. Know how the scoring works. Know your scoring, you know. My old blind dog, you know. If you get points for every time an old blind dog lick his dick, you better find you a blind dog, you know. I don't care if you got to poke his eyes out yourself. You got to go out there and get him. You know. Every year these teams, like, you know, last year we changed it up a little bit. You know, every year you got some teams that, or some coaches that don't like, you know, we added a flex position, and we'll probably try, maybe we'll vote to do points for reception this year. Don't be afraid of those changes. Just make sure you understand where those points come from and go out and get those players. You know, everybody, anytime you add a new way to score, it gives everybody an opportunity to go out there and score a few more points. So if you're playing in the same league and they seem to change it every year and you don't embrace those changes, don't worry about it. Just learn how those changes are going to affect the way you build your team. Go out
right
there and get those points.
Evolve or die. That's the law of nature. You either evolve or you cease to exist.
And
what's your recommendation
the
for... What's your recommendation for people who are at IDPs playing with the defenses?
Yeah, that's got to go to Phil, because I've never had any experience with the IDP league.
Well, my theory is to always go after guys who make tackles. You know, sometimes you want to go after the sexy picks to get interceptions or sacks. That's cool, but if you got an opportunity to pick up a DB, where, you know, like say a Charles Woodson, in my opinion. A Charles Woodson is a great player in real football, but I'd take an Eric Berry, the safety for the Chiefs, over Charles Woodson every day of the week, because Berry will always, I mean, I had him last year, and he averaged 4, 5, 6 tackles a game. And in my league, you got 2 points per tackle, 1 point per assisted tackle, you know, 2 points for solo tackle, and then he'd normally get a deflection here or there. DBs that make a lot of tackles. So, again, on that same team, Brandon Flowers, Jonathan Joseph, who was in Cincinnati. I mean, obviously he's somewhere else now. DBs that make a lot of tackles. And then your linebackers, again, harping on it again, guys who make tackles. So maybe not the sexy picks that get a lot of sacks from that linebacker position, but the guys who, you know, at the end of the season, they got 150, 200 tackles. I mean, that's a lot of points. There you go.
Hey, listen, fellas, I hate to cut in here, but I'm just turning up the street. I ain't been home since I don't know when. I'm going to have to cut you short and let you go. It was nice talking to you.
Hey, take care, bro.
I'll talk to you guys this weekend. I'll go ahead and post. We'll get something set up for that draft. And
nice.
I'll be sending you an email about how much money you got to bring. How's that?
Yeah, I know. I gotta square up with you.
Oh, we'll get out. That'll be all straight. I ain't never worried about you.
You know where I live.
Well, I can find out.
Hey,
what's that?
I want to tell you, hey Ray, it sounds like Ray Rice is your new Tiki Barber.
Dude, I was happy as hell when Tiki was talking about coming back. Don't think I wouldn't have drafted him.
So Ray drafted Tiki Barber like 3-4 years in a row. I was like, damn.
Yeah, and got paid, though.
Man,
didn't
Ray
I get paid?
Tiki Barber.
Well, all right there, Ray. We'll let you go, man. Be easy. Take care.
All right. We'll talk to you later. Bye-bye.
All right, man. All right, fellas, we down to the last little bit of the show. We got about 5 minutes left. I want to hit the folks off with some dope lines. Phil T's got a dope line. Before we get into that, real quick conversation just on the Arian Foster tweets. Arian Foster pulled his hamstring. He mad at fantasy football fans because they worried about his hamstring, and they want him to play instead of being injured. He called fantasy football fans sick. Give me a quick and dirty 2-minute take on Arian Foster's tweets.
He's right. Some of these folks lost their mind. Some of these folks lost their mind. I love fantasy football, but some of these folks lost their mind.
But see, I think Arian Foster lost his mind. Because the only reason anybody gives a crap about who Arian Foster is because of fantasy football.
I don't care about Arian Foster. I'm not a Texans fan.
The only reason the cat in New York even cares about Arian Foster is because of fantasy football.
So Arian Foster just needs to be glad that somebody cares that he's healthy. It's not like they're wishing him to get hurt. They want him to be healthy.
I understand. I understand where you're coming from with that. But I'm thinking I understand where you're coming from. But the lines have gotten blurred.
My thing is maybe the lines have gotten blurred, but the NFL is as big as it is because of fantasy football, because it gives a fan in Green Bay a reason to care about what goes on in Jacksonville. It gives a fan it gives somebody in L.A. who doesn't even have a team a reason to just care about the league, period, and care about Arian Foster, period. Because otherwise, Arian Foster is, I mean, a lot of, for a football player, fantasy football does what sports like baseball and basketball just naturally do because of the way the sports are. It allows football players to be individuals and gain access and more marketability as individuals as opposed to just being a guy on a team. Because, again, we talked about Greg Olsen, Marshawn Lynch. You know, we talked about a bunch of guys who are inconsequential to our true rooting interest tonight in our conversation about football, and that's because of fantasy football. It allows fans to care about guys that they wouldn't normally care about, and it allows you to engage and look at guys that you wouldn't normally be looking at. So, in that sense, when pro cats complain about fantasy football, I just think it's silly. I think it's silly because it makes some money. It brings attention to the game, and it's the reason the game is a $9 billion industry.
All right.
Can't wait.
So yeah. That's a 2-minute warning right there. We got about 2 minutes left. Dino, I know you got a dope line for us tonight. Get us off with it.
Hey, if your girl only knew. 1 in a million. Shout out to Aaliyah. It's been 10 years since we lost you. My Michigan homie, we miss you. We love you. Lost you way too early, Aaliyah. Saw a great special of you on BET last week. Took me back to high school. You know, wearing Fila flip-flops, hoodies, and Levi's 560s. We miss you.
Huh. Hey, I actually remember exactly when I found out she passed away, man. It was crazy. Kamal Phillips. Shout out to my man, Kamal Phillips. I was coming from Commons. He was turning the corner at Porter and Whitney. And he was like, yo, man, Aaliyah just died. And I was like, for real? He was like, yeah. And then we just both went our own ways. And that was the extent of the conversation. But I still remember that, man, because it was just like, what? It was one of those situations where you get news and it's unexpected. It's wrong. So, that's all for the show this week. We're going to let it ride out for this last minute. Thank you for hanging out with us for the last 2 hours. We greatly appreciate your patronage. And feel free to check in the Twitter, Facebook page, all of that. Check in, like us on Facebook, and be ready for another good show next week. Next week we'll be giving our NFL predictions. You know, the season's gonna be popping off, so we want to make sure we get our predictions and everything out there. All right, fellas, any last words? 20 seconds, get them in.
Stay away from Shanahan.
All right, we off the air. Woo!
You got to stay away from Shanahan. I got to give him that one. That's a trap.
Yeah, like I said, man, I like Tim Hightower, man, but that's one of my rules, too, man.
If he shows up, if he pops up at the right time, I'll take him. But I'm not taking him early.
And he's not going to be my second or third back. That's for sure.
Yeah.
You get, he could be my fourth back. Yeah, he could be my fourth back.
That's right.
He could be my fourth back, but he can't be my he can be my first, second. He can't be one of my top three backs. I can't have that. Because like I said, I can't get over Shanahan and his sneakiness, his shadiness, his indecision.
Well, I guess I'm screwed with Cedric Benson, huh? I'm just
Cedric Benson is good now, man. Like I said, I used to call him house shoes because when he was with the Bears, he ran like he had on house shoes, but he had a couple years with the Bengals where he's run hard, but he's with the Bears.
Like, well, no, Ray was saying that Goodell might suspend him, and he's right. I didn't think about that.
Oh. Did you take? You took him in the draft, didn't you?
Yeah, I took him late. I got him like fourth or fifth round, but, you know,
okay.
I was thinking like, man, this is one of the few guys that's a clear-cut guy, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, he's not sharing carries. He's getting goal line carries. I thought he was my steal.
Yeah, then he's got to spend time in jail. Cedric Benson. In the injury report, what is it going to say? Cedric Benson, incarcerated. You know, it's going to be like, you know, Jordan Shipley, elbow, questionable. Yeah. Carson Palmer, out, retired. Cedric Benson, out, incarceration. We have to do a double take. Didn't they say incarceration?
Yeah, maybe out, D block.
Right.
Hey, man, you got to put that in the intro. I don't know if we still record, but you got to put that in the intro, man. That's funny.
Oh, man. Hey, fellas, I got to do some prep for tomorrow morning, so I'm going to let y'all go. I got to get it going. So
yeah,
I get up with y'all, though, man. I'll be hitting y'all with info throughout the week,
okay.
Updates and stuff.
Okay. Yeah, I got to get going. I got to talk to these incoming athletes tomorrow.
Okay.
And student orientation.
Well, all right, then, man.
All right.
Take care.
All right. Take care. Bye.
Yeah.